Hello, welcome to this episode of Mood Swings. Sorry if it's come to you a little bit later than I'd promised on the last episode. I mean, I've been absolutely fucking terrible during this lockdown malarkey where I've said an episode's coming on this day, or I've said I'll do three a week and all this stuff, and I've not followed through. I'm really sorry about that if anyone is anyway disappointed. But I've been trying to do my best, and also, I don't know. Don't know how to put it. It just kind of things take longer than I often anticipate. I don't give myself enough time to get them done. It's weird, it's just a time where you feel like you have loads and loads of time to do, get as much done as you need to. And also, for me, the days just seem to fly past. It's quite a strange thing, I find. Anyway, one of the reasons this podcast is coming to you a little bit later is because I made the decision this week to try and get the podcast hosted on Spotify as well as all the other places that it's available to listen to. And I decided that once I got that process in motion, there was no point in releasing an episode kind of before that process was complete. So I don't know when you'll be hearing this episode, but I decided I'm going to get it edited, and kind of all set up ready to go for as soon as the Spotify stuff is all set up. So I'm just waiting for them to fix it on their end, and then this episode will be coming out. But by the time you're hearing this, it will be out. But that is what the hold up is, if anyone's wondering why the episode isn't out as quickly as possible. The guest for this episode is Leila Josephine. She's a poet. She had a theatre show. Well, she had two theatre shows at the Edinburgh Fringe. She had a really, really successful one, the last Edinburgh Fringe, Daddy Drag. I went to see it myself. It was absolutely brilliant. I was actually in Edinburgh for to see Louis Theroux at like something ridiculous at 9 in the morning, and we decided to go through the night before, the day before, and to spend a day at the Fringe seeing different stuff and kind of just experiencing the Fringe. It's a great thing. Really sad that it won't be going ahead this year, and sad for the implications that might have. But anyway, yeah, Daddy Drag was a show that I'd heard loads about and really wanted to see. It was quite strange. Sharon Van Etten, who is a singer that I really, really like, was playing in Edinburgh that night just by chance, and I tried extremely hard to get tickets for it. Couldn't get tickets, so in the end, I mean, Daddy Drag, I'd always kind of hoped to see it, but there was some kind of, I wasn't 100% sure if the timings would work out when Daddy Drag finished and when the Sharon Van Etten show would start. And then I remember I didn't get tickets for Sharon Van Etten. I was obviously kind of glad because she's one of my favourites, but was kind of glad that I'd get to go see Leila Josephine. And then I went to see Daddy Drag and came out of it absolutely blown away. And I remember having the thought, thinking like it was worth not seeing Sharon Van Etten, that I got to go and see Daddy Drag and just enjoy it and not be worried about time constraints or anything, and just was absolutely blown away by the show. Total change of pace. We don't really speak about Daddy Drag in this episode. Myself and Leila were scheduled to meet up in Glasgow to record an episode face-to-face. Sadly, we couldn't do that because of the coronavirus pandemic and lockdown and all that. That all came into play just before we were meant to and had arranged to get an episode recorded. So hopefully we'll get a chance to do that in the future after all this is over. Hopefully Leila enjoys speaking to me enough via Zoom that she'd be happy to do one face-to-face, and we can cover kind of Daddy Drag and all that and all that stuff then. But in this episode, we kind of spoke about a whole number of subjects, a little bit about Leila's poetry, about kind of coronavirus, a lot about Scottish identity and being Scottish, and a load of issues around that kind of stuff. The conversation went a load of places that I didn't expect it to. We talk a bit about the Foo Fighters cover that was done. I don't know if you saw that the BBC did a cover with multiple artists of times like these by the Foo Fighters, so we kind of ripped the piss out of that a little bit. We speak about X Factor, a whole host of stuff. But yeah, it was absolutely brilliant episode. This was my first time speaking to Leila face-to-face, apart from on stage at Daddy Drag when she was playing her dad. So yeah, it was absolutely brilliant to have a really nice conversation with her, and felt we got on really well. So hopefully you enjoy listening to it, and I hope you're happy that we're now on Spotify. I'm going to go, but yeah, please enjoy this episode with Leila Josephine. I absolutely loved recording it, and this is about the 10th time I've tried to record this intro, so I'm not doing that again. Okay, cheers. Sorry, just a quick thing before the episode properly starts. some of the audio in this episode isn't the best in places, just because with the internet, obviously you're not 100% reliant on it. So sometimes the connection dipped a little bit. There was a couple of times we had to stop and go back in conversation and stuff because Layla cut out a little bit. Massive apologies for that. We can only do what we can do with how well the internet's going to behave itself. I've tidied it up as much as I can, and I think everything still flows fine, and I think there isn't any bits where the audio gets to a point where it's unlistenable, and hopefully it's fine for you. But yeah, last you'll hear from me before the podcast, but I just wanted to quickly interject and say that apologies if the audio isn't the best in places, but I've tried to make it as best I can. Cheers.
Okay, so via Zoom, I'm speaking to Layla Josephine. How are you doing, Layla?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, how was lockdown?
A little bit flat this week. I think like ups and downs, like some days are great and then some days are pretty bad. I'm just trying to I think I can sometimes be quite negative, so I'm trying to be positive but also not disregarding how I feel. I think that that's the hard balance.
Yeah. Well, it's quite difficult, not to see the negatives when there's not much distraction from it if you get caught up in a sort of negative mindset. So it can be a little bit harder to kind of pull yourself out of that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so I think it's you're kind of right enough for what you say that you kind of just need to process it and understand that there's reasons that you feel that way, I guess.
And I think we've got this kind of narrative that I think's really unhelpful, that it's kind of like this sadness scale, when you're allowed to be sad and when you're not. And obviously when you're quite privileged and you have a home and you have finances in order and all this kind of stuff, you feel like you're not allowed to be sad because there's people that have got it way worse than you, and you're almost ashamed that you're even indulging any of those kind of emotions. But it's still just another way of pushing it in and not dealing with it. So I think we need to be really careful that people do have it worse than us, but we're still going through something really quite upsetting and traumatic in lots of ways as well.
I think it's still you're probably a similar age to me, and I think when I was being brought up in 10-15 years ago, that was kind of the thing people said to you to try and make you feel better if you weren't feeling great, is it'd be oh well, other people have it so much worse than you. And now that I suppose people have realized that's not the healthiest way to process these things. But if you've grown up with that sort of that being drilled into you, it's still your go-to. So if you start to feel low, you're like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way, as other people have got it much worse.
Totally. I totally agree with that. And I also think that in Scotland, we're taught to be quite ashamed of our privileges as well. There's, especially from Glasgow. Are you in Aberdeen?
Yeah, Aberdeen, yeah.
Aberdeen, and I imagine in Aberdeen as well, there's this kind of idea that if you achieve too much that you've kind of forgotten where you're from, or all this kind of this narrative of when you reach a certain privilege that you're quite shameful of that privilege, so therefore that eats into the narrative as well.
Yeah, totally. I think it's just Scottish people aren't very boastful really in any sense. Even if it's not so maybe like privilege of that, if it's an artistic talent or something like that, people aren't as kind of willing to whip out the guitars at a party and be like, look at me kind of thing. It's more sort of get up and do a song, and people have to kind of be pushed into it. I think anyway, it's more of a cultural thing.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, you still get those dickheads that will whip out the guitar at a party, but I'm only joking, obviously. No, but I think you're totally right. And I've been thinking a lot actually about Scotland, and I think that we, you know, we have this like strange view of success, and I always think about like our sports teams, like how we always manage to get like to a certain point and then don't like push ourselves further, and I always wonder about it and how different it would be like in somewhere like London, where everyone's like really striving to do their best all of the time. Or like not their best, but this like kind of like, I put success in quotation marks because it's a certain type of success I'm talking about. And I think I don't have a conclusion, but I wonder, I've been thinking about a couple of things. Is it because we are more content with our lives just being as they are, and like kind of being satisfied with achievements and not being like super hard on ourselves? Is it because, you know, we have had this kind of downtrodden attitude since, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years because of being like ruled by England? Or is it something about this kind of like culture of shaming anyone that's out of ordinary? And I don't know what the answer is. Like, I think it's probably a mixture of all of those things. And then you look at like people like Lewis Capaldi and like what he's managed to do, but he's almost managed to do it through making fun of himself.
Yeah.
So he's almost managed to like be like, oh, but I don't take myself too seriously, so it's fine. Whereas yeah. like a lot of people that have tried to reach success very seriously would maybe be like, I don't know, kind of shamed in Scotland slightly, maybe.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think like Lewis Capaldi is a good example. I don't think he would have had the, I think it's definitely helped with his initial success and his like further success that he's kind of got that personality as well, because I think in Scotland having that sort of banter goes a long way, and that obviously translated, made him really, like, won him over hugely with Scottish fans, and then he's obviously just taken that to a global platform. It's interesting. I think like your point about kind of being downtrodden, sort of, that relates to what you were saying about sport as well. I think it's like the Scottish people have almost always got a feeling that it, no matter how good it's going, that at some point it's all going to go wrong.
Yeah, so totally. Like,
you find it almost hard to enjoy things as they're occurring, because you're sort of convinced deep down that at some point it's all going to go wrong. And that's like the way it goes 9 times out of 10 with like Scottish like football or rugby. Like you get to the stage where there's just enough hope that it might go right, and then at the last minute, like it goes wrong. So it's kind of,
it goes wrong.
It's, well, there throughout.
I was watching, we watched this program called Next in Fashion. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like on Netflix. And it's like, it was like it's like a global design competition where loads of people design clothes, and it's like Alexa Chung and somebody off Queer Eye like judges it. And there was this Scottish girl from Aberdeen on it. And you could just see like, she just like lacked a bit of belief in herself. Like she was like paired with this like designer from Brooklyn who was like, I'm gonna win this no matter what, and like just like so like you know, like this really like positive affirmation constantly. And then this Scottish woman was just like freaking out and just feeling that she wasn't able to like do her thing, even though she was doing really well. And that actually like made her kind of like go in a really bad mood and then kind of like fuck up for herself. And I was like, yeah. It's when I saw it, I was like, oh my god, that is so me. Like if I don't feel like something's going that well, I just like I just can't handle it. I'm like, of course it's not going well because this is my life, do you know what I mean? And I wonder if that's like a narrative in Scotland. But it was just really interesting to see her paired up with this kind of like American dream, like where they tell themselves all the time that no matter who they are, where they come from, they can achieve whatever they want. And I just wonder what like Scottish narrative is for that. Like I don't think it's the same.
No, it's interesting though. I think there is some sort of like, obviously no one would get anything done if they didn't have some sort of like belief or ambition to strive for things. So there is that sort of feeling of, oh well, I can do it. But also I know what you mean about this. As soon as it goes wrong, there is that self-doubt that kicks in.
Yeah,
kind of like, yeah, restrict you in some sort of way. How did they get on in the end? How did she do?
She left. I think she was like third or fourth to leave, so she left pretty early.
It's a shame.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think it's really interesting, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it because I feel like I'm going through something quite similar in terms of like being at a bit of a junction in my work and trying to figure out what the next step is, and just having this like overarching feeling that like it's not going well, even when it's going well, and that voice in your head, like I'm trying to figure out where that comes from.
Yeah. Well, you just had the live album came out, was it this week or the end of last week?
Yeah, last Friday it was, yeah. But yeah. It was a week last Friday, but the weeks go so slow, it feels like a month ago.
And how's that all been going? I'm sure it's been well received.
Yeah, it's quite hard to tell because you're obviously just like giving it out to the world and they're digesting it at home, whereas I'm so used to like that live kind of exchange and performance where I get like instant feedback. So it's quite a strange feeling for me to just like let it go. But I mean, it's had like a lot of streams and like people have tagged it and stuff. So I think it's fine. And I suppose I wonder on how well it translates. Like, can it exist in another space from liveness, or is it... I should probably explain it. It's like a live album where I've like recorded a spoken word gig that I did in January, and I'm not sure if it translates well into the recorded form yet, but I took the chance anyway.
Yeah, well, I listened to it the other night when I was cooking my dinner, and I really enjoyed the live aspect of it, and like it, like obviously didn't feel like I was at a gig, but as much as like listening to live recording and getting that atmosphere and stuff, I thought it totally translated and it flows like the track and everything. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Nice one. Well, thanks for listening.
No, no, not at all. My kitchen has become kind of like a festival space for me in the absence of live music. Like last Saturday, I was cooking burritos, and I think I just let them simmer for about 2 hours while I like danced around my kitchen to the Twilight Sad.
Oh, that's good.
And drank tinnies. So yeah, it's a place to listen to live recordings in my flat anyway. So, but yeah, it was the second one, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was recorded at the Hug and Pint, was that?
Yes, yeah, which is on Great Western Road. They were doing some fundraising because obviously they're an independent organisation, small business, so I don't know whether they're going to be okay after this. So I hope that they are. But I think we're all quite worried in our kind of like network of like pub performers, like comedians and poets and stuff, that we're quite worried about what the landscape's going to look like after this is over, because obviously that's where most of our shows are. And Nicola Sturgeon saying yesterday that it looks like that we might be social distancing till Christmas makes us a bit concerned about what we're coming into when this is all over.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, well, so you kind of just have to take what you're told, but do you think that it's viable for us as a society, for us to actually be social distancing until December? Do you think, like...
Yeah, I don't know. My boyfriend, he works for the NHS. He's a junior doctor, and he's working in a COVID ward at the Queen Elizabeth in Glasgow. So I feel like, speaking to him, like, it's clear that the social distancing has really worked. And that makes it, like, clear that it's something that has been really important, but I do have genuine concerns about what the well-being of people is going to be that are in their houses for that long.
So I think they're
I
think unfortunately like it might get to a breaking point where people just kind of stop, like on a larger scale, stop obeying what they're being told to do, which would be unfortunate for the, you know, the medical sort of repercussions. But I'd be interested to see how the government sort of responds at that point, whether they would be, I don't want to get too into like, right, but you politics. Know, if people, yeah, but if people did like start to, you know, really struggle with it, would they kind of like look at it and be like, okay, this is a social issue and start like letting people, like letting things go back, like opening pubs and restaurants, or do you think that it'll be like a total...
I also wonder if people will disobey, because we live in a society where we are very good at obeying orders and we don't feel like there's any other option. And I think if the well-being of people suffers, I think we're not going to see like rebellion. We're going to see the opposite. We're going to see people just like becoming agoraphobic or not being able to leave their houses or just like suffering and depression within their houses. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll see unrest actually. But I'm hoping that there's going to be a really clear plan about how to, you know, come out of this. And, you know, in places like Australia and stuff like that, they've started like opening beaches and public spaces and parks and stuff again. So hopefully that will happen. And then hopefully we'll be able to meet in like 10s and 20s and stuff like that. But I think it's going to be a long time before we see like a festival or a club or anything like that. And I suppose that's just a challenge for us to learn how to be with each other without getting steaming all the time.
Yeah. A lot of people are still getting steaming all the time, just yeah. on their own.
And also, the drug dealers are still making money. They're still at it. It's crazy.
Yeah, this actually came up on a podcast, like one of these podcasts before. We discussed it, like how that's one area that was social distance and won't be getting concerned. Like people, aren't, like drug dealers aren't going to be making efforts, I wouldn't have thought, to make sure that they're, you know, like contact-free yeah. delivery or anything.
Well, apparently it's fine. I've got friends that have been buying in. I'm like, I can't think of anything worse than having a party by yourself. Like, getting on it.
I mean, yeah, that kind of party on your own doesn't really sound appealing at all.
No, it doesn't. I've seen a lot of my friends that I would never think to see running and cooking, which I think is quite funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of my friends have become obsessed with Strava, which is like the running and cycling app.
Yeah.
Which I found quite amusing.
I literally went for a Strava run because I got nominated for that 5K, £5. And I got like, I used to run, but I haven't done it in years. And then like I got like maybe like 1.5 kilometers or something like that. And I was like, I definitely have COVID. My chest is so tight, I'm going to have to stop. But it was definitely just unfitness.
Did you get through? Did you do the full 5?
No, I didn't do it. I'm still working up to it. Like, see, like 2 years ago, I had like a big argument with someone and I ran 10 miles just on my own down at Prestwick Beach. And I did it in like 2 hours, whatever. So like, I know in my heart of hearts that I could just do it if I wanted to do it. But and I think that this is something that I found during all the quarantine. I'm finding it very hard to like stick to one thing and spend a lot of time on one thing.
Yeah.
So when I'm running, I'm just like, Layla, you could just stop. Like, this is quite uncomfortable. Why don't you just walk? Like, it's a beautiful day. Like, and that's something that I've lost during this like pandemic. But I've been doing yoga, which has been good, but it's not really the same thing, I don't think.
It's funny you mentioned yoga. I've started doing yoga just since we went into lockdown.
Yeah, how are you finding it?
Yeah, good. I got up at 7:30 this morning to do a yoga class on Zoom at 8 a.m. I mean, there's not many things that would get me up at 7:30 by choice, so I must be enjoying it to yeah. some extent.
I think it's one of those things that you don't realise the benefits of it. But yep. you keep going back to it. Like, I've been doing it for about 10 years. So I started doing it when I started going to uni. And I just, like, I hated it when I was at uni. Like, we had to do it. And I was like, oh, this is just shit. But slowly but surely, it started, like, coming back into my life. I would find that I would, like, be, like, kind of drawn to it. And I think for someone like me that's, like, I'm definitely not diagnosed, but I definitely think I've got like a little bit of like ADHD in terms of like my attention span and being awfully distracted all the time and quite chatty and all this kind of stuff, that I think that it's been a really good tool for me to learn how to like be quite still and quite like take my time in things. And you know, just like breathing is obviously really important for it as well. And
yeah. Do you meditate as well? Like, or do you meditate within like your yoga?
Yeah, I definitely should meditate more than I do. Like, I know the benefits of it, but when I'm in it, like, I really enjoy it. But getting to that point, it's quite hard. I actually did a class like a couple of weeks ago, where you have to do it with your eyes open. Have you ever done that before?
Like meditate with your eyes open?
Yeah.
No. It sounds terrifying.
It was such a different experience. Like, it was 25 minutes of just staring at a wall. And it was like a class, so I couldn't, it was like a live stream, so I like had to do it. And it was like really different experience. Like I felt, but also like 2 minutes. So you're really scared that I'm only 2 minutes in and then I'm going to feel like I'm here forever. But then when you've done it, it feels like really good. But it's this idea that you should try and still observe the world around you while you're trying to like be still and inward. Very strange.
How did you find it? Did you enjoy it? I do a bit, and then since I start the two Zoom yoga classes I've done, I both had meditations at the start and the end, and I quite like combining it with you, like with the yoga. I quite like doing that. The last time I meditated, I did like a guided meditation on like relieving shame, and it was like it was one of the most visceral experiences of my life. Like I like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I like cried for like 20 minutes straight. Whilst listening to this YouTube guided meditation. It was strange. So I think maybe I have meditated since then, but I've not done any like of the sort of like deep guided ones since then, because it was like such a
time. Yeah, and like I always think that the guided ones are really good for getting you started, but the ones where you're actually forced to do nothing are really like, that's when you really get the challenge of just trying to control your thoughts, or not control them, but just like witness them. But the other day I did one, like sometimes it doesn't go well at all, but sometimes it does. Like the other day, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. It was yesterday. Yeah. And I put on a timer for 15 minutes. I was like, right, I feel myself being really manic today. I'm going to meditate. Put my timer on for 15 minutes and close my eyes. And I constantly, same as the running, like I say to myself, oh, you could just stop right now. You could just open your eyes. Just open your eyes. You'll be fine. And I was just like, I think 15 minutes is probably up. And then I was having this kind of like chat with myself in my head. I was like, I think probably 15 minutes. And I swear to God, as soon as I opened my eyes, the timer went off. It was like my body knew that 15 minutes had passed. Like I wasn't counting or anything. Yeah. I was probably like so present that I was able to like sense it. It was like, it was really cool actually. I was like, oh, that's like a cool achievement. It reminds me of Stormzy. Stormzy used to say that he didn't need an alarm clock to wake up in the morning. His body would just wake up. So he'd be like, I'm going to wake up at 7. And his body would just wake up at 7. How mental is that?
Yeah, it's strange. Although sometimes I think, I don't know, sometimes you'll wake up, like I wake up in the morning and I'll know my alarm's a way to go off.
Yeah.
Like I'll wake up and be like, all right, the alarm's going to go off and I'll hear it. But then there's also times where I'll wake up and think, like, my alarm's going to go off and I'll wake up and it's only like, I'm going to be asleep for an hour. So,
yeah,
I'm definitely not as regimented as Stormzy, but I know what you mean about getting that sort of sense in your body that a certain amount of time's passed, I guess.
I just think that it's a cool thing that your body can do.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you know somebody's looking at you as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how it's like, I don't know. For me, that's all in the sort of same bag. It's like, how do you know these things?
Yeah, your intuition.
Yeah, that's the word.
But I feel like you don't know those things unless you're like aware. So I think it's a good way of like realizing that you're being like present and aware.
Yeah. Do you think meditation and things like that make you more aware and like,
I think definitely since I've started doing yoga and started doing meditation, it's taught me some like really good kind of lessons within lots of different things, but being more aware of like how I'm talking to myself. And kind of, it's quite interesting as well, like I work in schools like teaching, and I'm working with like primary sixes at the moment, not right now obviously because quarantine, but before it started, and we're making like all sorts of artwork, And, you know, these young people have been taught that there's a right answer and there's a wrong answer. And you're going in and trying to teach them that whatever they do is correct. Like, when they're being creative and, like, there's nothing wrong and there's nothing right, just to, like, go for it. And you see you're already unpicking these, like, quite dangerous lessons that they've been taught within the school structure. And yoga... it makes me think of yoga, like when you're in yoga, they tell you if you can't do something, it's fine. It's just like, you just have to accept that that's the pose, that that's the shape that you're making, and not to push yourself into a place that's like uncomfortable, and just to like accept where you are. And I always think that with like the young people, like when I find myself getting frustrated that they're not doing it properly, which there is obviously no such thing, I have, like, I feel like those are lessons that I learned in yoga, just to be like, no, that's where they're at today, that's what you have to accept, and you have to like encourage them, even though it's not like the, like the best that they can do, in quotation marks, the best, whatever that means. But that I think that those kind of lessons really influence how I work with other people, and also how I like treat my friends and family and stuff as well.
I know what you mean. It's having that like sort of awareness that no one's ever trying to do their worst, right? Pretty much all the time, people are always trying to do their best. Like 99% of the time, no one's trying to do something wrong or trying to do something to... Most people, I'd say, aren't trying to do things to hurt other people most of the time anyway.
Yeah, I suppose,
but having that awareness.
Yeah. And I also think we're at our worst right now. Like as a society, we are at our worst and are at our best at the moment, because I think that people are like under extreme pressure within their households and within work, and that we just have to be like really aware of that and accept people how they are just now and not try and push things on them.
Yeah. Do you mean just like within lockdown, or do you mean
within lockdown? Yeah, I mean within lockdown for sure, but I guess that it could be translated to a really stressful society as well that we're living.
Yeah. You lived in Japan for a couple of years, is that right?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Do you feel like... I've never been to Japan. I don't know too much about the culture or how they are kind of like socially, but I've been to Thailand, so I find that like in Asia there's a lot of like similarities between... And things there are obviously different, like a lot more spirituality, and they're a lot sort of, but I don't know, did you find that the change, like living in Japan, there being a bit of a change of pace and things feeling like different? Do you think that's influenced you, how you feel and think about things?
Yeah, I definitely think that, like, I'm not an like expert on Japanese culture, because I lived in a ski town that was mostly like had tourists in it.
Okay.
But what I did recognize is that like Japan, like many other countries, is like a place of extremes. So you've got like these people that do nothing but work, and you've also got these people that are like live off the land and like super spiritual and, you know, still praying to like same ancestors and stuff like that. But I would say one thing that I took away was like their respect for each other was like really amazing, in terms of like they just were like so polite and kind, and like just like the, you know, like there's things like when they pass money, they make sure that they hold they do it with two hands rather than one hand.
Yeah.
And it's all about just like I suppose it's about respect to what that like exchange is. And like they bow their heads as well when they meet, or they say thank you and stuff. Like, I think that that's just like practicing gratitude in a lot of ways, which I think is something that we could definitely, as Brits or Scots, could definitely do a little bit more of, this like politeness I think we have a politeness, but it's definitely, it's a different kind. It's almost like, I don't know what it's like. It's kind of like not, it's kind of to show face rather than, it's more about hierarchy than it is about like, you know, being aware. But yeah, like Japan was an amazing country, and I, my main regrets would have been like not submerging myself more in the culture. But from what I saw, they were like super respectful. But actually, when we first went over, there was this guy that had come over with us, and he was like a bit of a reprobate, but like nice enough guy, just young, like straight out of school, whatever. And he ends up going home with this woman on one of like the first nights, and he went back to her hotel, and like they were like shagging or whatever. And then her husband walked in at like a fist fight, and they were expats of some sort. Like I don't know where they were from. Maybe they were Aussie or they were. And they had this fist fight, and the police get called, and the police put them in the cell for the night, and they only get out of the, or they go to prison. Like that's how it worked.
How does it work? Sorry.
They had to write each other a letter to say sorry, and that's how they got let out of the cell.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Their crime rate is really low.
Can you imagine if that if they did that in Scotland? Like, if you got arrested for fighting, you could just write each other a letter. I don't know whether that would improve things or make things worse. People like, we've got this guy with jail free card.
I don't know. But it doesn't work over in Japan. Their crime rates are so low.
Yeah. That actually reminds me of when I was in primary school. Me and this boy were, like, fighting or just, like, scuffling or whatever. And we got in trouble for it. And the other boy was like, turned to me and was like, just tell the teacher we were playing and they won't give us in trouble. So that was what we did. That's what it reminds me of. Just like, okay, we'll both be all right if we do. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
A moment of collaboration against the authority.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that that's what all Scots can agree on, that they don't like authority.
Yeah, I think I just didn't want my mum and dad to find out and to get in trouble at home or in trouble at school either, I suppose.
Totally.
I was just thinking, it's interesting what you said as well there about like Scottish people and like how there is a politeness, but it's different to that kind of sincere politeness that you witness in Japan. I just kind of like, I thought that like sometimes in Scotland, if you feel like someone's being too polite, like we would view it as like disingenuous, or they thought they were like there was some sort of snobbery in that. Do you know what I mean? Like if someone was being,
yeah, totally,
you felt it was off top.
I also think that there's like this thing where people are like, oh, like Glasgow's the friendliest city in the world. I'm like, Glasgow's the only city in the world that someone could be friendly to you and then stab you right after. Like it's like it's this like really intense friendliness that like almost is like, I don't know, like almost passive aggressive, I think. But like for what people say about like Glasgow and Scotland, I do think most people would look after you if like anything had happened to you in the street or whatever. But I do think we have all these like unwritten rules, I think, that, you know, neighbourhoods like play out themselves.
Yeah. I've also thought quite a lot about Glasgow, because I know you've got a poem. It's in your collection. I can't remember the exact title, but it's about the Kingston Bridge.
The Sunrise Bridge, on the Kingston Bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's got quite a lot of kind of in-depth stuff about your views on Glasgow and how you... That was after you'd spent a period not away from Glasgow, it's when you moved out of the city and it was how you viewed it coming back in.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I think that for me, Glasgow was always, it's always home. Like it's where I grew up. It's where my mum grew up, her family grew up. But I think that we do party too much. I think we've all encouraged each other to take partying to a really unhealthy level. And it's like so part of our culture. It's like really woven into who we are and our identity, actually, and how we communicate and how we form bonds and our communities and all this kind of stuff. And I just don't know how healthy it is, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. And like, I think that there's a real class divide with drug taking and drinking in Glasgow. Like, I think that we probably, the middle class and the like kind of old working class probably drink as much as the working class. I mean, if you can even call working, and maybe not even working class, maybe more like deprived areas and stuff like that, that there's still this idea of like, fuck it, just get on it, fuck it, just get on it, fuck it, just get on it. It's just that we are, like, most people are at a level where they can get away with it and the police won't talk to them. Like, and I look at all the people like that I know that are on blues, and I look at all the, like, the shame that's put on, you know, people that are on heroin and blues and all this kind of stuff as well. And I just think there's a bit of a disconnect between who we are as people and who we think, what we think is acceptable or not.
Yeah. I don't think that's exclusive to Glasgow or Scotland, though. I think that is like a wider thing. So there's, it's like certain stereotypes that go with
Aberdeen certain drugs as well,
I think, I think it's something that's ingrained in a lot of people. I've like seen myself do it where I've like, you know, like judge other people on what they do and view certain things as other as negative and other things as positive, when really it's all within the same kind of bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that is like a UK thing. But I just feel like there's something in Scotland that makes me, and I don't know if it's just because it's my experience, but I just think that there's not that much of a difference between what people think is acceptable and what people think isn't acceptable. Like, it's not that big a jump.
Yeah. Totally. But there's a lot of, like, stigma on one side and not so much on the other. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
I really hate when people use the word junkies. Like, it really, like, it makes me, my insides, like, crawl. I just think it's such a derogatory term for people. And I just think that, you know, it would only take two people above you to call you that. And I think that's something that really annoys me and I find really frustrating about the culture we have here and who we think's an acceptable drug taker and who we think's not an acceptable drug taker.
Yeah, and then, like, suppose the word Jakey as well is, like, someone who's maybe a seasoned drinker but maybe a little bit more well off might feel, like, entitled to call someone a Jakey just because they're drinking, you know, on the street, or they've not got I don't know, the money or the position to be able to facilitate
fancy shoes,
their drink.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. Totally. And I think naturally, more importantly than that, I think that the reason that people drink too much or take too many drugs is the same reason, no matter what class you're from.
Yeah.
It's a kind of like, it's a loneliness, it's a numbing, it's a sense of, you know, purpose. It's like all those things.
Does this come from, like, some, I don't know, like, things that have occurred to you personally? Like, is this, like, things you've found from your own behaviour, or is it just
I think
other people?
I feel like I never got to the point where I felt like I was addicted to drugs or drink. Like, I don't really drink midweek, or like I'm quite well controlled, but what I would definitely do is I would definitely, if I was having a bad day or anything like that, that is when I would be like, right, I want to go out, I want to like hit it really hard. And like, so I recognize that part of it was grief as well. Like, I lost my dad when I was 19 and I'd, you know, had a breakup and like all these things that, you know, aren't major things. Like, a lot of people go through them, but for me, you know, it was major, and those were that was the kind of catalyst for me to do this kind of experimenting partying. But saying all that, I feel like it was also the best time of my life, and I made the best friends from it. And I do think that like the war on drugs is never going to work when they are that fun and there's so many festivals going on and all this kind of stuff. So I think we need to like really reject the way that we talk about drugs and that it's not a shameful thing. And, you know, I would like to see a world where all drugs are legalized and regulated and, you know, everyone that makes them and is part of the exportation of them is like paid properly and like all of this stuff. But I just don't know if that will ever happen within our lifetime or within our government, really.
It seems a long way off, I would think.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think that we'll probably see marijuana being legalized in our lifetime, but I don't know about other stuff. I've seen this like really interesting stuff about safe spaces. Have you heard about them? Where it's like a Norwegian or some sort of Scandinavian model of having places within cities where people can go get drug, like get heroin and have like safe injections and stuff like that. Okay. So it's the idea of that you legalize it in certain contexts and they'll always have a doctor there with them and stuff. Because at the moment there's like, I think the last time I read anything about it, there was like 500 people injecting heroin in Glasgow city centre. So you're talking about like a lot of people like taking it on the street, taking like God knows what, people injecting cocaine now on the street as well, just like really like causing a lot of seizures, causing a lot of HIV. Like it's just like not working. Whatever we're doing is not working. So I think things like that, initiatives where you like take the shame out of it and you actually provide a service which is there to look after the well-being of these people is, you know, it's kind of revolutionary, but it makes so much sense. Can't believe like not thought about doing it before, but Glasgow I think are already taking steps to like try and get something like that implemented.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes down. I think for a lot of people that might be a hard sell if you told them like the government was going to fund that. Like I totally understand what you mean and I totally see the benefits and like I think it's like a great idea, but I can see for a lot of people where they're having their, just kind of what we've talked about, having their stigmatized views of drug taking and stuff, they would just see that you're facilitating drug taking and wouldn't see the other side of it, of all the benefits of like making a safe space for them and then also making other spaces safer for other people,
public,
I suppose.
Yeah, totally. I think like there's this real disconnect about government spending, about like how, you know, if you put money into like, you know, neighborhoods that like don't have anything or whatever, it's just a waste of money. But like the amount of money that we spend on the criminal justice system is mental. Like they have people have a real disconnect about like how you save money. Like if you have like proper like structures where you're keeping people off the street and out of jail, you're gonna see like saving money in the long term because crime is really expensive.
Yeah,
but you're right. I think there would be a lot of stigma attached to it.
Yeah, I just think about, I don't know, maybe it's a generational thing as well. Maybe in time that kind of thing would become more widely accepted. I do think a lot of things, people have grown up with these sort of stigmas and it's hard for them to adjust their viewpoint, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, definitely.
Yeah. In a total change of pace, there was something I was wanting to bring up with you that I'll do it now before I forget. The last thing I saw last night before I went to my bed was you'd retweeted the video of the Foo Fighters cover the BBC put out.
Yeah.
Just saying, like, when will they realise that no one wants this? Which I couldn't agree more with. But yeah. How did you feel about you? I know how you felt about it, but
I think the first one I saw was, did you see when they all did Imagine? Like all these like celebrities that couldn't sing all took a line of Imagine.
I don't know if I've seen them.
It was like first week of lockdown or something. It was like Mark Ruffalo and like all these just like random celebrities. I don't even know who it was. Did Madonna take it? I can't remember, but it was just like, oh, come on to fuck. It's just like, I don't know, I just find it so like earnest. Like, do you know what I mean? Like a bit over sincere.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I wonder if it's like, it's a trigger because I know that I can be a bit like that as well. So just trying, maybe it's like me like putting them down because I realise there's something that I might do. But it's just this like, I don't know, it's just this false sense of like, I understand what you're going through. Like, I'm just like, you're a celebrity. You have no idea what people are going through.
I just also think it just like sounds bad as well.
Yeah. I was sad to see Dua Lipa in it. I do like Dua Lipa.
I mean, I don't judge any of the individuals really, but it's just like, I find it like, there's a disconnect with like, people think getting all these people like at the top level, some of the BBC, they think getting all these people in singing together will make have an emotional connection with people, but what really like connects to people is music that's written by one person or a group of people performed that way, it's sincere, not like getting multiple people to sing one line each of a Foo Fighters song and then having someone like do a rap.
Yeah, it's a self-service thing, isn't it? It's like it self-serves those who are in it, that makes them think that they look good to be in it. But it reminds me of, did you ever like used to watch The X Factor like back in the day when they do like when they were in the live shows, they'd get all the contestants out to sing like a song that didn't make like sense for a lot of the like groups and stuff. So you'd have all these people like pelting out all these like, don't know who it would be something like Ollie Murs or whatever. And then it was just like reminds me a bit of that.
Yeah. I also think as well when they do that, they always try and like so cater each individual's section to try and show a bit of like what their style or what their genre is, whilst like keeping it all consistent with the actual track, and it just becomes like an absolute melting pot.
Do you not think it's like they try and really show their skills as well? So a line that would usually be like quite like quiet, like before the build up, you've got someone absolutely pelting it, doing it all these like, you know, like vocal aerobics or whatever to try and show off how good they are within like 5 seconds. So it just sounds so weird.
Yeah. Did you ever watch The Voice?
I've seen it before. I was never like that into it.
There was just, I remember this is just coming to my head now, but there was the guy who fronts the script, he was a judge on it, and he like, I think he was kind of like falling in love with one of the contestants, but it was all sort of like unraveling like on the TV program.
Oh my god,
he had a partner out with that, and I think from what I understand he's still with his original partner and maybe nothing ever happened, but it, I mean like I've never seen anything, it was kind of weird, it looked on like a show that's so like kind of like at that high production level, and a lot of it's supposed like kind of falsified and made to look a certain way. Like he just kind of, he did seem to be having this kind of weird, like there was this weird sort of sexual tension and weird, like he was making this emotional connection with someone, and it seemed really sincere, and it felt so out of place in a show where everything's trying to be sincere but not isn't really. That there was this weird, it's like sort of, I don't know, it was like almost like an affair going on live TV. It was odd. But yeah, it's one of my favorite things.
Oh, I bet the producers were like frothing at the mouth at it as well. But they were like, this is perfect.
Well, probably, but it just felt weird on the show because it was obviously like, it was like the one thing they hadn't like, what they had probably hadn't been written in or wasn't controlled. You could just tell that this wasn't like, or if they were acting, then they're fucking like amazing actors, but it just seemed like this was something they hadn't kind of like bargained for. I don't know why that came into my head, but I just remember it was just so strange.
But it's like it's kind of like, I know we've talked about lots of different things, but you know, it's like goes back to what we talked about right at the start with like the Scottish idea of what like sincere and genuine is. And I think like within shows like The Voice and stuff, it is so Americanized with this like, it's like people have learned a script about how to talk, and you see it on The X Factor and stuff as well, but it's like they've learned the script off Oprah or something. It's all about achieving what you want, all about that, you know, it was hard growing up, I'm from a town that no one makes it out, like all these like real like almost like what do you call it, when just a little phrase that like a not like a jingle, but something that people learn like through watching stuff. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I feel like it's not that random. I feel like that's kind of what we've been talking about the whole way through.
Totally.
This idea of success and how we respond to it.
Have you ever seen the, what's it called? It's the film about the Scottish country singer.
Wild Rose.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I think that it's really good. I think that kind of shows like a lot of what we've been talking about, where she kind of like self-sabotages a lot, and in the end she kind of like obviously gets to where she wanted to go and just kind of like looks around and is like, fuck it, nah,
I don't want to be here. The one thing that film, like, there was a few things I think a bit dodgy about that film. Like, I should probably say that is like my idea of a perfect movie, like just that like narrative, like a Glaswegian woman wanting to be a country singer is like, I'm gonna like it whether it's shit or not. But like the accents were so dodgy, that was one thing. But the another thing is, have you ever heard of Kacey Musgraves? She's like, she just won the Grammy for like best album like 2 years ago. She's like, she's not just country, like she's a huge star, and she's in that film, but she's blurred out in the background in a bar. And so they've obviously got her in because she's like a superstar, but whoever's editing the film has completely forgotten that like she needs to be featured in it because she's like a multi-million pound artist or whatever. So all you see is like Jessie Buckley in this bar like walking past her, and then she's like blurred out in the background. It's like they've totally been misguided. They probably spent a fortune getting her in, and they've just been like, no, Jessie's the main feature in this scene. But I thought it was really good. The writer, Nicole Taylor, she wrote The Nest as well, which has just been on BBC. Have you watched that?
No, I've not seen that.
So it's like a BBC drama. It's got the guy from Line of Duty in it. What's his name? I can't remember. Famous Scottish actor. But it's like, it's not that great. And a lot of people that have spoke to me about it have been like, oh, it's like rubbish. It's like cringe because they've all got Glaswegian accents or stuff. But I just thought it was brilliant. I thought it was so cool to see like Scottish people represented on TV, being in like a really high production, big budget TV show, like, and like you could watch Glasgow and see all the different points of the city and stuff. But she wrote Wild Rose, and she also wrote The Nest, and it's about a girl who becomes a surrogate for a pair, but they're like, she's a criminal, and it's really good. It's good like brain holiday stuff if you're looking for something to watch. But Nicole Taylor, who wrote that, also wrote Three Girls, which was about a paedophile ring in North of England somewhere, which was on BBC as well. That was good as well. She's a great writer.
I don't think I've seen that Three Girls, but I think I remember it being on. Or did I watch it? I don't think I did.
It was years and years and years and years ago, and I thought I hadn't watched it, but when I went to watch it, I was like, oh, I have seen this. Okay. But she's a good writer, someone that's achieving high places.
Is she Scottish herself?
I think she is Scottish, or she definitely lived in Scotland a long time. I think she is Scottish.
Yes, well, very good. Right, I'll not keep you too much longer, but is there anything you want to promote or anything?
No, just if people want to check out the album, that's kind of all I've got going on at the moment.
I'll link it in below. Are you doing any more? I know you've been doing like quite a few like live streams and stuff. Have you got anything else?
Yeah, I'm thinking I might actually do a fundraiser in the next couple of weeks. So I'll let you know about that. I've not got anything confirmed, but I thought I would do like a Zoom fundraiser for somewhere.
Cool, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Layla, for speaking to me.
No, thank you so much for having me.
No worries.
Enjoy the rest of quarantine for however long it may be.
You too.
Right, bye.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I'm not going to say too much just now because it was quite a long one. But yeah, thanks to Layla for speaking to me over Zoom. I absolutely loved recording that one, as I've said about 10 times now. And yeah, thanks to you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode or anything, please share it with your friends or anyone who's interested in spoken word or poetry, or just who might want to listen to a podcast that's a little bit mental health themed, share that Spotify link is essentially what I'm saying. Share it far and wide. Now that I've got us there, let all your pals know. Everyone's got Spotify, don't they? No one buys albums anymore, sadly. Everyone's a fucking on the Spotify. Also, on Spotify, where you may or may not be listening to this podcast, Layla has her live album out, which is brilliant. I listened to it, I think, yeah, I mentioned it on the podcast, but I listened to it in my kitchen whilst cooking my dinner one night, and I absolutely loved it. It's a great listen to all the way through, or, you know, what I sometimes do with poetry, books, or even live recordings, is if I'm not wanting to commit to listening to a full record, or reading a full book, or watching a whole load of even YouTube videos that, like, a poet put up on their YouTube, I just pick one I quite like the sound of the title of. So if you're not feeling fully on board with listening to a whole poetry album at the moment, why don't you just pick one that you like the title of and listen to that, and then I'm sure you'll end up coming back and listening to the whole load, because it's a brilliant live album. Okay, thanks to you all for listening, and I'll be back at some point. I'm not making any promises about when the next episode's coming out, because, as you've seen, I can't keep them. All right, cheers.